This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician. Jenny hit Austin. My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
Just want to do things my own way, you know.
I lost my mind again, out where the river swells with rain. She kindly took me in, made me feel I was not the one to blame. As change was blowing in the trees, the unknown.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett on the P2 Podcast. Broadcasting from beautiful Fort Worth, Texas, from Trinidad World Recording Studios. Boldly projecting my voice to all four corners of this little bluish-green planet that we call our Earth. Folks, how you doing? Phil here. Hanging out in the nicely appointed nook right here in the Pritchett home, Trinidad World Recording Studios. How's everybody doing out there? Boy, I'll tell you what I'm doing. That's what this show's all about after all, isn't it? Great to have you with us. I'll tell you what I'm doing, man. I am rousing myself slowly from a catatonic state, almost kind of an induced coma from the Grammys the other night. Yes, indeed. Now listen, before you all feel, you always hate the Grammys. You hate anything new. If it's not on vinyl from the 70s, you don't like it. Now hold on one second. The last several years, man, I've always watched the Grammys. You know, we got the kids are all interested in the Grammys. They know all the acts and everything. So I always watch. I always enjoy it. I watch it every year. I think LL Cool J does a good job as the host. He doesn't try to do too much. I think that's the key to his success. He's a nice, comforting presence. I think the production of it is pretty good. But man, it seems like in recent years, even you had, Dylan would come out and play. With the Avett Brothers. Man, Bruno Mars was great. I mean, he's out there dancing with a horn section. There's some energy. Then, ladies and gentlemen, Sting, and he comes out and does a song with, who did it, like Coldplay or somebody? Even Coldplay, who I don't really like, but they're at least a rock band. It's going, paradise, bro. There's some rock and roll. Radiohead did it a few years ago. U2. I don't know. There's some energy. So this Grammys kicks off. AC/DC comes lumbering out onto the stage. Fire and Brimstone. You know, I've seen AC/DC like two or three times. Maybe I've only seen them one time, I guess. God, I feel like I've seen them a million times, but their show hasn't changed much. You know, I thought they looked and sounded okay. I mean, I you know, a lot of people were like, oh my God, my girls were like, oh my God, all these guys, gross, gross. I was like, hey, come on. You know, I was turning it up. So it was kind of funny. I mean, I got a good laugh out of them. But it was a good highway to hell, man. A little rock and roll, kicking it off. Okay, I was like, all right, great. And then, dude, we settle into the show. And I'm paying casual attention. And, man, I mean, it was just the biggest song of the year. Just stay with me, Sam Smith. How many times do we hear that song? Stay with me. Just this drone. You know, a nice song, but just soft, morose, depressing. And then, hey, ladies and gentlemen, Usher. I'm thinking, all right, here we go. No, it's just Usher just walking around, kind of just moping around the stage. Just, and if you need a little, I mean, I felt like I was at a funeral. And then, ladies and gentlemen, Dwight Yoakam and that girl, whatever her name is, the country girl. Cool. What do? Strum. I love Yoakam. Another slow one, man. I'm just drifting off to sleep. Then, it just went on like that. Kanye standing in the light, and he just sitting there, just mumbling into the, you know, through the pitch correction and the harmonizer stuff. Boring as hell. I'm just like, and then, Ed Sheeran, he's good. But then there's John Mayer up there playing a pink Charvel Jackson guitar. Oh, man, how the mighty have fallen. Come on, man. So anyway, and his songs are just kind of, he's a perfectly good singer, a great pop guy. But golly, man, I mean, am I wrong? I mean, God, the Civil Wars, remember them? They played a couple years ago. They kind of banged out some real bold, bluesy, bluegrass kind of two-part harmony thing. And, just those other acts. I mean, there's usually some excitement, you know? I keep waiting. I mean, Prince was a presenter, but he didn't come running out there in his outfit and just do a solo and... It was just one after the other, man. Just this drudgery. Drones, man. Just putting me to sleep. What else is notable about the Grammys? I don't know. So, I was cynical and very critical of them this year for being boring and dull and all the songs. And Katy Perry rides out on a lion at the Super Bowl. Yeah, she's kind of upbeat, but even she sat there and sang, just in front of some curtain. It was cool. It was a nice song. What's the other kid's name? Ariana Grande. They just sang these morose ballads. And then as if that's not enough, man, then they just come on, the director of music, just, we're fighting for our lives. Music's being stolen. We're trying to pay artists fairly. Spotify is ruining it. I'm just like, oh, gosh. Then here comes Obama. I'm here to talk to you about... domestic violence. I'm just like, good grief, man. Pass the syringe. Put me down, man. God, wait, where's rock and roll, man? Isn't anybody alive, for crying out loud, man? Is this a funeral? Did somebody die? What's going on here? We got church choirs coming out with every group. Oh, then Levine and Gwen Stefani. I'm like, okay, cool, man. They're going to come out and do some Maroon 5, kick out the jams. What do? Just close the eyes. The choir. I mean, the crowd could not come on their feet. I mean, Grammy's passed, man. It's ladies and gentlemen, Paul McCartney. Just, all right, 1, 2, 3, 4. Well, she was just 17. It's just something. Am I wrong? God, it was boring. I was just like, every song, even artists that are known to be upbeat and rocking, just came out and ugh. I mean, I love Beck, but was it just... In the time of chimpanzees, I was a monkey with some cool things going on. Oh, no. Beck comes out with an acoustic guitar, joined by Mr. Coma-inducing man himself, Chris Martin from Coldplay, just leaning on the mic, just going, yes, comes a day, I'm just like, God, grief. I'd had enough, man. I just went to bed. She picked up my book I'm reading about Stonewall Jackson. When that's what picks you up at night, you know you're in trouble. Oh, so that's the Grammys. I really don't have much else to say about the Grammys. Other than my kids like, Dad, you're so cynical. You just hate everybody. I'm like, look, I watch it every year. I'm always cheering on. I like whoever. I like a John Mayer coming out and kicking ass on guitar or Bruno Mars or Avett Brothers or, man, Mumford & Sons play a few minutes. I mean, just kicking the bass drums, sweating, jumping around. I'm like, so a little energy, a little fun. I don't know. Is that too much to ask? Boy, this year it was, man. So, yeah, so if you didn't see the Grammys, man, don't bother, dude. It was just a drudgery. If you want to, instead of the Grammys, you can just watch, some state funeral for some world leader or something. So it had about as much excitement, the death of... a king or something, just, tune it up on YouTube and, watch that, get about as many thrills out of it. Oh, man, what else, Phil? Well, the other big Grammy news was every Grammy, I guess it's every Grammy week they do this. My email's been blowing up. Of course, last week we talked about Bob Dylan's book, Chronicles, and just what it means to me all these years later to continue reading Dylan's great autobiography, Chronicles, Volume 1. Well, a big part because Dylan doesn't give a lot of interviews. He doesn't say much. So he wrote a lot. He's written this book, and it's, interesting to read even two or three or four or five times as I have. So needless to say, after the podcast, got a lot of feedback on that. And then I really start getting a lot of texts and feedback, people going, dude, you see, you know, about Dylan giving this speech at the Music Cares ceremony. I don't know much about Music Cares. I know it's an organization that helps musicians who have fallen on hard times or late in their life, didn't have any insurance. It raises money to help people pay medical bills and things like that. A noble organization, no doubt. So they're on, they always honor somebody. So they've honored. They're always honoring some, you know, titan of music. They did Neil Young a year or two back. And evidently, from reading up, Bob Lefsetz wrote extensively about this moment. And I read several articles about it. So they were honoring Bob Dylan. So the way these things happen is it's a, you know, formal deal. It's always like the week before the Grammys or something like that. And there's a big dinner, and it's a big schmooze fest, and it's full of industry people and hipsters and wannabes all hanging around and talking. And then, you know, they roll out Neil Young, and he gets up there and grabs the award and mumbles something to the mic like, you know, we need to keep music going. And everybody, he gives a short speech, everybody applauds, and they want to get back to the party. That's how this thing works. It's an industry deal. Nobody, everybody goes, you know, and schmoozes and talks about it and so forth. So no one's expecting much from the mumbling, gruff 73-year-old Bob Dylan. You know, they, well, I got to honor somebody. Dylan's a big guy, and so we'll eat our steak dinner, have our cocktails, and you know, and then we'll humor Dylan by you know, letting him get up there. You know, thank you very much. It's a great organization. I sit back down. We'll go back to our party and our schmoozing and everything. Well. Let me tell you what. Bobby Dylan, Robert Zimmerman from Hibbing, Minnesota, had other ideas, which has just been great to read online. You can go and just Google the Dylan Music Cares speech. It's all over everywhere. And they finally got a transcript up that I've read. I read a lot of quotes from it. So basically what went down is this. You know, ladies and gentlemen, is, well, the great Bob Dylan. Everybody applauds. So Dylan comes up there. I mean, he's just got this. He's got this manuscript. Like, this is typed or handwritten, you know, tome in his hand, crinkled papers, and he gets up there and throws it down on the podium, and the, you know, always quiet Dylan, he sits there and he delivers this 30-minute speech that just encompasses his entire career, his body of work. He talks about the titans of music that he's that he idolized and influenced all of his songs. For the first time in any interview or anything I've ever even seen, he talks about the inspiration for some of these tunes and what he'd listened to. That, man, this was the song going through my head when I wrote that song. And, he goes on and on and on. And he gives very, very gracious thanks to Peter, Paul, and Mary. He mentions about 10 people that just really helped him out. John Hammond is the first guy that signed him to Columbia and believed in him. Lou Levy, his first publisher. Johnny Cash, he talks a lot about Cash. And for me, as a Dylan guy who knew a lot of this stuff already, it was very interesting and moving. And to read some of the accounts of people who were there, most mainly Bob Lefsetz, who was there, he said, man, this is not how this thing goes. he just goes, you know, like we said, guy gives some speech, you go back to the party. He goes, man, Dylan, he said, you could hear a pin drop in there. People were just spellbound, silent, this huge auditorium, jaws hitting the floor as Dylan just went through it, man. And he called out critics and stuff for criticizing his voice all these years. You know, people say, oh, Dylan can't sing anymore, lost his voice. And I guess Dylan's point was, man, so what? He goes, man, but they always point that out, that I've gotten old, my voice has changed. He goes, they never say that about Tom Waits. They never say that about Leonard Cohen. You know, other elderly, gruff-sounding voice guys. He goes, they all get a free pass, yet I don't. I never understood that. So, man, he took some real pot shots and delivered a little bit of scorn around the industry. Most notably and painfully to Merle Haggard. I'm not sure what that's really based on. I'd assume it's based on Haggard being kind of a country purist, a Okie from Muskogee kind of guy. He probably saw Dylan always as a no-good hippie or something. So anyway, he said, you know, Merle Haggard didn't think much of my songs in the beginning, but hey, you know, and he indicated I don't think much of him either. And he said, but Buck Owens did. Buck Owens covered some of my songs. And whose blessing would I rather have, Buck Owen or Merle Haggard? Well, you figure that one out. So he said some things like that that got people going like, wow, shit, you know, kind of laying it out there on some people, laying it out for critics. But I thought more the general consensus of the 30-minute speech was not one a bitter speech at all, but one talking about just how many times he'd listened to these folk songs. And it brought to mind a book I always talk about, Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell, that he or she who practices the 10,000 hours is who becomes a master at that particular craft. Tiger Woods is not a golf prodigy. He wasn't born. He just put in 10,000 hours of practice. And therefore, he had just hit more golf balls by the time he was, whatever, 10 years old than all the other 10-year-olds. He had practiced more, played more, and been in more competition. Therefore, he was just that much better than anybody else. Gladwell always talks about the Beatles and how they woodshedded it in playing in bars and strip clubs and awful places in Germany for years and years, doing 2 and 3 and 4 shows, 4-hour shows a day, but just learning how to perform and joke with each other on stage and joke with the crowd and come across and have energy and hold the crowd. That the Beatles, and you know, some band that got put together by a label would go on Ed Sullivan, and you're just like, yeah, they're okay, they're just kind of shaking their head and standing there. But there was something different about the Beatles. They just projected and they came across, and everybody goes, well, that's not really what's happening, Phil. But BS, that's exactly what's happening. They just had it in them, they had put in the hours, and it shows, even in a 3-minute clip that you can't put your finger on. And that's what Dylan explains in this speech. He talks about, you know, a lot of people say, well, I'm a fan of folk music. Yeah, man. Well, they own some records or something. And Dylan just said, man, if you had listened to John Henry or, you know, Woody Guthrie songs and all these folk tunes that he had sunk into and devoted his life to learning inside and out, he said, I'd played them so many times and I knew them by heart. And it got to where I could listen to a song one time and I could just learn it. And that's why I went to New York to find folk singers, learn more folk songs. He said it just became my entire DNA, that my entire makeup with these folk songs, I could throw them off at will. And man, all that information was bouncing around in his head, all those images, all those little statements and truths about work and humanity and life and love and tragedy and all these things that the folk songs had in them came out in Dylan's songs. Sometimes people point out, oh, Dylan's ripping this guy off or something. He has the same sentiment. Well, that may or may not be true, but Dylan doesn't deny that to any degree. He's like, sure, I mean, stuff does come out. You know, a little phrase or an idea or an image might reflect something that, you know, some folk singer would sing about or some blues singer that he'd studied. But it was remarkable. So Dylan was just like, man, I'd listen to, you know, Johnny Cash. How is the water, mama? 2 feet high and rising. He said, man, I'd listen to that so many times. He said, and that song was banging around in my head when I wrote It's All Right, Ma. I'm Only Bleeding. You know, those great Dylan songs. And how he wrote The Times They Are A-Changing based on kind of another song. He said, and his indication was he wasn't doing anything special at all. He said, if you'd listened to those songs as much as I had, you too would have written Come Gather Round People Wherever You Roam. And admit that the waters around you have grown. And accept that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you'd better start swimming, then you'll sink like a stone, for the times they are a-changing. He said, you put it in with the folk songs, that's what comes out. I didn't think I was doing anything extraordinary, you know, but everybody else did. So it was just revealing and fantastic, amazing. Bob Dylan just gets up there, a guy not known for talking at all, much less talking about his craft or his life or his influences at any great length, gets up there, astounds and stuns a bunch of young wannabe hipsters who are all looking to sell out and get their money. And here's Dylan, man, it's like having Shakespeare, man, still alive or something. He's sitting up there 73 years old. He's been through a lot. He's seen a lot. And he said that. He said, I've traveled everywhere, man. He said, I wrote these songs, but these songs didn't just happen by themselves. And that's what he you know, lends a lot of his inspiration to, as he points out, that the work and the effort and the passion that he put into it. And you know, these groups today, I mean, I don't know. I'm not trying to call anybody. You know, some young guy, you just kind of go, well, he's up there dancing around. I mean, he's probably got Michael Jackson's greatest hits, and so now he's Bruno Mars or something. Great. Look, I'm not putting anybody down, okay? But there's not a wealth of wisdom in it. Anytime you put that kind of study into something like Dylan, those folk songs, I think the direct result of it is old world wisdom, man, is really what comes out. And stuff like that is what comes out of it is mystique. What comes out of it is artistry and, you know, a sense of being a master at something. And Dylan had done so much of that by the time he was just like 22 or so, that he was able to write those songs that were full of such profound insights and truths, but he had all put it into himself. That's kind of the point of it. And, you know, I think it, no, few would argue that, you know, artists today, they listen, you know, this Texas music scene, you know, I say it all the time. I'm friends with all these guys. I put no one down, and I'm not saying I'm different than any of them. I'm just not, but I'm always a little astounded when I get around a lot of them, and then they're up there playing good songs, and you just kind of start talking about their influences and what they're listening to, and man, a lot of times it doesn't go a lot deeper than, well, man, you know, my dad had Willie Nelson's greatest hits, you know, and I listened to Viva Tolingua by Jerry Jeff Walker and Robert O'Keefe, Number Two Live Dinner. And, you know, yeah, man, I knew then that I just wanted to play the guitar, start writing my own songs. I'm like, that's all he listened to is a couple of live albums, but there's no, have you read the biography? Did you look into their influences? I'm not saying you have to do these things to have a music career, far from it. But I do think that there's not going to be a profound longevity or depth to anything they're doing unless they have a deeper understanding of where all that stuff comes from. And, you know, there's no level. There's just an arbitrary amount. But I think the more you put into it, the more you're going to get out of it. And some of these truly great songwriters of the day, whoever you want to talk about, I mean, I think you'd be astounded at what, I don't know, if you want to, you know, I saw Ryan Adams on Austin City Limits. And man, everything he does is there's a lower level to what he's doing and has always done than what you're going to get from your average dude with an acoustic guitar playing at the bar here in Fort Worth. I mean, there's just no doubt about that. I mean, I doubt Ryan Adams just kind of listened to Bob Dylan's greatest hits and grabbed a guitar and just kind of started doing this stuff. I don't know much about him, but I mean, from what I do know and just what's apparent in the kind of stuff he's able to produce and evoke in his vocal and in his songs is something, profoundly deep. I'll bet he's dug pretty deep into some of this stuff. He probably knows a lot of the Dylan catalog and the Woody Guthrie catalog and the Beatles and where he's probably read a good deal about who these people are and where they came from and how they arrived at all their great music. That's just what it takes, man. It's just what it takes. So anyway, man, pretty astounding stuff from Bob Dylan. So I haven't found anything. I found some clips on YouTube of him recorded just doing some bits on it, but not the whole speech. So if you want to read the whole speech, it's well worth your time. Look it up. There's a transcripts out there. Rolling Stone had one. LA Times had one. You can find it out there. Bob. It's kind of funny. We just did the podcast about his wisdom of his books, and then there he is extolling it all to everybody. So who knows? Maybe Bob's listening to the podcast. I hope so. Thank you, Mr. Dylan, for everything. Well, what else? I got another great story here, and from Phil World. Oh, man, have you made it to the Mansion Hotel? The Mansion Hotel in Dallas, Texas. Phil Pritchett and the full band and the British are coming. We've got residencies there. We play there all the time. It's just turned into the greatest gig for us, for the people, for the place, for the city, for everything. It's fantastic. It's like going to Las Vegas, only better and with more integrity and class and dignity. Than going to Las Vegas, you can go to Dallas. Valet, park your car, come on in for free. Yes, the drinks are expensive, but you just get in there. It's a small bar. And who's in there? Phil Pritchett and the full band. Or one weekend a month, the British are coming Friday and Saturday night in there doing the British hits. Just rocking it. We love it. Well, man, Saturday night. We played Friday night a couple nights ago. Had a great show Friday night. Friday night can be a little more subdued. If you're the kind of person that wants to have a table and not be too crowded out, you'll have a better chance, albeit not a very good one, but a slightly better chance on a Friday to get a table. If you get there before 9 o'clock, you could sit down, order a drink, and watch our first couple of sets and have a great time. Saturdays are pretty wheels off. I mean, if you're kind of like, man, I want the crowd, I want the big party and dance and, you know, craziness. Well, Dallas Saturday's always like that. Fridays are too, but maybe a little bit, maybe wind down a little bit earlier on a Friday night. So Saturday night, the full the British are coming are back in there. Richard Marshall on keyboards, Blue, his brother Blue Marshall on bass, the great Cody Frank on drums. We always love playing the second night because we've kind of had a quote unquote rehearsal Friday night. We just played the night before, so but, you know, we ran through a few new songs. We added like Hey Jude. We added we just wantonly add stuff. I mean, let's try this one, Dear Mr. Fantasy by Traffic. We did Ooh, What a Lucky Man He Was by Emerson, Lake and Palmer. Oh, just to an astounded crowd, just like, what the hell is this? Oh, but come on, man. I got to put a few in there for myself. Oh, come on. British prog rock. So that one was in there for me. Lucky Man. Sorry, folks. But it was pretty cool. So we did that. So the third set rolls around. The bar is packed. Everyone's dancing. And Richard comes in and grabs me and throws me against the wall. I'm like, good God, man. What? And Richard goes, you'll never believe who I just met in the bathroom. I'm like, I don't know who. He goes, man, he was standing right behind me. Red hair, washing his hands. He goes, you guys doing a really great job tonight. Really great, really classic. Loving it. Having a great time. I'm just like, what? Jason Garrett? Yes. Jason Garrett, head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. Our team, Richard's team, anyway, one of the big celebrities here in Dallas, of course. Head coach Jason Garrett. There he is, man, in the bathroom. So he comes out. So Richard, of course, Richard's everybody's friend. He and Garrett just come out of the bathroom, just hugging it out. Just, ah! So they come back into the bar. And Richard, that's when he throws me against the wall. Oh, my gosh. So we get on stage for the third set. Garrett's been sitting over there with his lovely wife right by the fireplace, right there in front of the stage. I'm like, oh, yeah, I think I saw him earlier. I just didn't, you know, wasn't really paying attention. So we rip into the last set, man, and the crowd gets up. Everybody's dancing and everything. And so there's Garrett and his wife, man. They're just up just dancing by the stage. We do, what's the long, slow one we do every third? Whiter Shade of Pale, Procol Harum. Do that one. There's dancing and swaying, and then we do. You know, we play a whole set. It's great. And so right after we're done, they're up. They're right by the stage. Garrett and his wife, coach and his wife, just laughing, drinking, dancing in front of the stage. And people are, you know, coming up to him, going, "Hey, coach," and taking pictures a little bit, but they're not beating him down too bad. You don't get too that. The mansion's really where these types of folks can kind of come and, you know, eat dinner in the restaurant next door, have a really nice meal, then come into the bar for a cocktail, some dancing. It's fantastic. So that's why you see the people, Kid Rock and whoever, Troy Aikman and these guys are always in there. So man, it was really, really fun. So we're kind of watching Garrett finishing out this show. And right after that, Garrett just walks over. And if you're in Dallas, you've heard the ticket. They do the fake Jason Garrett voice on the morning show a lot. The great Gordon Keith. You know, Garrett, he's kind of got a robotic way of talking, a lot of classic kind of coach speak, for lack of a better term. And it was funny because he came up and just shook my hand, and he had just that same voice, you know. He's really enjoying it. Heck of a job you guys are doing. Heck of a job you guys are doing here. Love the classics. Really having a lot of fun. Love to dance. Dancing with the wife. Dancing is fun. You know, I shook his hand. Man, great job, coach, this year. And looking forward to it. Got a lot of work to do. Looking forward to it, though. A lot to build on. Need to improve, but a lot to build on. Just kind of like he's, you know, at a press conference a little bit. But his wife, Richard, was telling me, talked to Richard. Of course, Richard just sits down with the Garretts for the rest of the evening after we load out at 1 o'clock. He said they were there late, you know, sitting by the fire. So Richard, you know, that's what you can do at the mansion, you know, is just cozy up to the fire with Jason Garrett and his wife and Richard Marshall from the British Are Coming band. Have a cocktail, kick back, tell some stories. So that's exactly what happened that night. And, you know, Richard just said, Mrs. Garrett, I don't know her first name off the top of my head, but she said, man, this is the first normal night we've had. She said, since like the summer when the, you know, spring camp starts. Of course, you have football season. She goes, it's just nuts. We don't get to do anything. So she said, this is one of the first nights we've had to kind of like, hey, let's just go out. Saturday night, we'll get a great dinner at the mansion. And she said, you know, we were expecting on kind of going home after that, but they heard the blasting sounds of the Who and the Animals and the Stones coming out of the bar. And they asked the maitre d', like, what's going on? And they said, oh, man, the British are coming. They're in there. And the people were dancing and screaming and having a great time doing our thing. She said that so me and you know, Jason just went in there and grabbed a drink. Man, we just had a ball. We thought we'd just stay for a minute. She, man, we stayed for 2 or 3 hours. So fantastic. Welcome to the family, Mr. and Mrs. Garrett. It's great to have you. You join a long list of truly great music lovers that follow Phil Pritchett and the full band, and the British are coming. We're glad to have you. Well, folks, that's all the time we've got today. Wow, covering a lot of ground. The Grammys, the Dylan Music Care speech, Jason Garrett watching our gigs at the mansion. Oh, there's always so many stories to tell, folks, and I try to tell them to you as quickly and as freshly and as enthusiastically as I can. I can do no other. Well, email us, phil@philpritchett.com. Hey, we play private parties all the time. God, I hand out a million business cards at these mansion gigs and elsewhere to come play for people. And that's what we're doing. They email, they call. Hey, man, having a party, having a ranch party, having a wedding, having this Christmas party, whatever it is. So just call, man, and we'll come play as Phil Pritchett and the full band, or the British are coming, or both. We've even done shows where the British are coming play first, then Phil plays. I don't know who I am anymore. It's just it's a bizarre, fun entertainment juggernaut we've unleashed here. So be a part of it. Keep up with us, or just text or call me, 817-733-5256. We'll come play for you. Or come play at the studio, man. We're building a new studio facility out in the Lake Highlands area. Richard is building one out there. Huge room, tracking room, recording space. So we're going to have even more options to record your album, and are very excited about that. Great singer Abby Peck we're working with right now. Brandon Aguilar, we've done his vinyl release here very recently. So a lot of exciting things in the works, including a Phil Pritchett album and are you listening? A British Are Coming album. What are you talking about, Phil? You just going to do some covers or something? No, the British are coming. We're working on it, man. We're going to go original, quote unquote. You know, write a couple of songs as this somewhat fictitious British band. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know what it's going to be. We kind of got some songs, fun, rocking British type, British invasion type tunes that make fun of Dallas and stuff like that. Sing about Richard's hair and stuff like that in the band. So all kinds of fun. No rules, man. Just making it up and having fun. We'll keep you apprised of the progress these projects make. Well, have a great week, folks. We'll have another podcast for you here very soon. Thanks for listening to this one. Tell your friends about it. And we'll talk to you next week, folks. Take care of each other out there. Much tougher.